Hello, everybody, and welcome to Options Discovery. Today, I am here with Allard Jacobs of All Options. Allard, can you please introduce yourself, what you do at All Options, and your education and career background?
All right. Hello. My name is Allard Jacobs. Like you said, I'm 54 years old. I founded All Options some 25 years ago, 24 to be precise, and I'm still the CEO.
Awesome. And then what is your educational and career background before starting All Options?
Right. So I started going to university when I was just 17. I was quite young. And I did a year of econometrics because at the time I thought that was the most difficult study. And indeed it was. I failed after a year. And I switched to economics. I graduated in business economics with a specialty in financial markets.
Interesting. And then before starting All Options, did you have other jobs where you were trading before? Or how did you get into trading?
Yeah, so I started working in 1991, which was a really difficult time. And I started out as an analyst at James Capel. James Capel was a subsidiary, a broken subsidiary of the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank in Amsterdam. And they hired me because I took the trouble of finding their own annual report at the Chamber of Commerce. So I that's what you're supposed to do as an analyst. So that's why they hired me, and I stayed there for a year. The day I accepted my job, I also got invited at a job interview with Optiver, and I declined that job interview. But then a year later, I returned to Optiver, and I started working there.
Interesting. And so when you started All Options, what was your drive behind starting your own trading firm?
So let me first talk about my career at Optiver. I think I was their 15th employee. I think today they have over 1,500. It's incredible company. After a year, I made partner. I think I was number 11 or so. But in the end, I was a peculiar hire for them because I'm not that tall. And at that time, all trading was done on the floor. I'm 170. That is, for your viewers, 5'5 or 5'6, I think. And they were looking for really, really tall guys, but also ones that are very quick at calculus. I was that. So they hired me and they trained me to go to Germany, where was the first screen trading exchange. Which is now called Eurex. So I worked there for 2 years. So first my year as a start, and then the second year I was partner. And then I left because I was not only small, I was also, I thought I knew things better than other people, which did not make me a very nice colleague. So I decided for myself, it's probably better if I'm the boss, if I know better. Yeah, that's what I did.
Interesting. Well, that's a very interesting background. I just have one question. Yeah. I guess just out of my own curiosity, why did they want to hire people that were taller back then?
Because of the floor trading. They wanted big guys. I did have a loud voice because I did rowing as a steerman. So I knew how to project. But in crowd trading, you need to be tall and you need to have a loud voice. But I only traded in Amsterdam for about a month.
Oh, wow.
On the floor, and then I went to Eurex, or the Deutsche Terminbörse, as it was then called.
Okay, got you. So that's very interesting, because I guess in this day and age with electronic trading as prevalent as it is, it's just not something that you even think about.
I know. No. But basically, their selection process was not length. It was their calculus test and the logical problem-solving test.
Yeah, of course. So getting into where we are today with All Options being been going on as long as it has, 24 years is a very good amount of time to be running a firm like this, and congratulations to you for that. So can you talk a little bit more to the founding of All Options and kind of the process that you went through to get that started?
Well, All Options was not founded 24 years ago. It was founded, All Options is 24 years ago. I started trading in 91. I established my own firm in 1994. It was also a floor trading firm. We went from two traders to 45 people in 4 years, with a very strong focus on training, same as we do today. We hired young people, different profile though. And in 98, the floor operation in Amsterdam, I had to fold it because of the Russia crisis. The clearing closed our accounts and I had to close the company, but I had also established a membership at the Deutsche Terminbörse in 1998, and I bought that company myself, and I continued with All Options. So after I had to fold Goed Gedaan Options, and I found a job for everybody else, I placed them with another market maker, and I placed them with a broker. I continued on my own with All Options, and I built that out.
So in terms of All Options, I saw on your website that it seems to be organized in a very different way, where it has an open structure that's very team oriented. Can you discuss the philosophy behind this, behind structuring the company this way, and the benefits that you've seen from this organizational structure?
We really trade as a team. Mm-hmm. We think we're in a constant process of learning and getting better and problem solving. We believe it's very important that you share your ideas. We also think that you need to learn, and the best way to do that is to learn from each other. So in our training program, we have we emphasize people to be curious. We want people to be curious, and we train people in giving feedback, asking for feedback, and the people that are successful with us, apart from obvious quantitative skills, are the ones that are really proactive in engaging, asking questions, thinking about how we can do things better.
Interesting. Yeah, because it seems like that is very different than some of the structures that are at, you know, bigger institutions where it's a little bit more rigid. It seems like the structure at All Options a little bit more fluid, a little bit more team oriented, where someone that might not be the highest up can still make a difference.
Well, we employ 80 people at the moment. If you compare us with the larger firms, the larger market making firms, I believe that at All Options, it's easier to have an impact and to make a difference. And this is also what we tell people during the hiring process. And I think this is what people appreciate. This is often what they give as a reason when they choose us over IMC or Optifer, that they really like the size of the firm and the fact that they believe they can make an impact.
Yeah, I feel like that's very important. Especially as we get into this next part, where we're kind of going to be talking about a little bit more what attracts people to All Options. So one of the first things that I wanted to ask you is kind of taking a little bit of deviation, but we'll get back to that topic. What does it take for you to be the CEO of All Options? And how has your role changed from when you started the company over 24 years ago to where you are right now?
That's a lot of questions.
We can take it one at a time.
Yeah, so I feel I've reinvented All Options a couple of times over the history. There's basically two strategies in which you can approach the market. You can believe the market is always right, and you trade a lot of volume at very small margins, trying to keep the prices in balance, or you believe that you're smarter than the market. then you don't do that many trades. You're often not right, though. The variance of your results is very high. You can hit it very big or not. Well, we have employed both strategies, sometimes at the same time, sometimes alternating. Right now, we're really at the stage where we believe we only have a very tiny edge over the pricing in the market. We think we do have an edge, but it's mainly about processing as much volume as we can, trading as many options as we can in a fully automated way.
Interesting. And so when you talk about reinventing the firm, can you kind of speak a little bit more to that point and kind of the different types of reinventions that you had to go through or the different pivots that you've had to make along the way?
Well, one of your first questions was about my educational background. It's an economist. In the beginning, I would hire all economists. And I can tell you from my own personal experience, economists are pretty useless. What you need is, or these days, you don't need an opinion, you need to research. You need to drill things down. You need to take decisions based on data, not on what you think or whether the market's going up or going down. It's an important, you need to play a numbers game. Trading is, by definition, an opportunistic business. And we did so until 2006. We just looked at, okay, where can we make a bit of money? Where's a lot of trading? And we would start trading there, whatever it is. In 2006, we employed 40 people, all white, all male, all Dutch. Right now, we're very diverse. The only thing that hasn't changed is the average age of my colleagues, which is around 28, I think. I get a year older every year. When I started, I was, let me see, I was 22, now I'm 54. But my colleagues somehow stay the same age. So that hasn't changed, but it's very international. I would say, yeah, it's pretty diverse background. Very different from what it was. And right now it's totally not opportunity driven. We refuse to do crypto, for example. We only do one thing, and that is making markets in options. And we try to get better at it every day.
And just to kind of go into what markets that you make markets for in options, is it mainly equities? Is it commodities? What markets do you usually?
Yeah, it's equities. On? It's only equities. And index options. So right now in Europe, we trade around 20% of the available margin on screen. Currently we're in the process of opening an office in Austin. I think we've found a place. Last Monday, I signed our application for a license with the SEC. We have established a team to go to Austin, and we expect to open an office there 1st of March or 1st of April, and we want to be trading and market making from the 1st of July.
Interesting. So with that expansion, is this the first expansion outside of Europe then?
No. In 2006, when we were this opportunistic trading firm with all white Dutch guys, we, for the first time, set out a strategy, and the strategy was a bit silly, I must admit, becoming a market leader in the world in options. So we started expanding. We bought another firm. We opened an office in Hong Kong. We opened an office in Switzerland. Our cost went through the roof. My attention was with the strategy, and that was wrong. From 2010 onwards, we lost a lot of money. Our revenue did not go up. So we had to cut costs and shrink back. What you have to do and what we're doing now is totally focus on execution. The strategy is not that important. We put a dot on the horizon. For example, within a couple of years, we want to cover the whole US equity options market. So that gives a direction that tells everybody what we need to do. That's it. That's the strategy. The focus of what we do day to day is on execution. How do we get better? How do we get more products per trader? How can we get rid of any micromanagement that is there? How can we have a very small edge? How can we improve our strategies to get the trades from the market? That's what we're continuously thinking about.
And that's really interesting to hear you say, because obviously keeping that edge in the market and focusing on that execution, that probably should be the priority. And it is obviously for you now. What are some of the principles that you employ now to kind of keep that long-term success going and to always keep finding that edge?
So we're focused on learning, on getting better, having cycles of continuous improvement, taking decisions based on data, measuring everything. So we set out four KPIs. The first one is market coverage. In Europe, that's 100%. In the US, it's 0%, but we have a goal there to get it to 100% as well. We look at the share of the margin that we have. That differs from for the lesser liquid products, it's bigger. For the indexes, especially Euro indexes, it's a bit smaller. But on average, our margin share is around 20%. And then we look at our margin retention. So if we think we make a euro, how much after costs, after hedging, after adjusting our prices is left over at the end of the day? And that's between 40 and 50%. And the fourth metric, we look at how often the decision or the trade was fully automated. And we aim to get that percentage up. Now, there's different processes that we continuously evaluate and try to make those better.
That's interesting. So when it comes to doing that re-evaluation, how often are you looking back and kind of seeing what worked, what didn't work, and is it almost a perpetual kind of activity that you're doing, or is there definitely points
it's
in time
really
where you
differs from what we're looking at. I can't really say.
Okay.
Because there's different workflows, and sometimes we look at it every day, sometimes we look at it every 3 months. It differs.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely understandable. Now, when it comes to what makes a successful all options trader, you talked about how obviously your colleagues are a lot often stay young around that 28 year old range. So what qualities make someone successful at all options as a trader?
Apart from the obvious ones that you need a master degree in some sort of quantitative science, you need to be curious. You need to be open, and you need to engage, you need to ask questions. That's the only way to learn, because that is really essential. It's not only learning. We very often, for our traders, it is almost always the first job. So more than a job, we try to offer an experience, which involves learning, becoming a better person, becoming more mature, because people are often, my colleagues are often very young. And it's learning to, it's a bit of a nerdy trait that we do. So we learn to communicate better, but also through the analysis, through experience in the market. It's learning together, problem solving, and then on to the next, and improving, and also as a person, how to give feedback, ask for feedback, and basically doing things together. We do not have an internal competition for functions. We compete externally. We're quite aggressive, but internally, there's no such thing.
That's really interesting. So there's no compensation structure internally where people would feel like that they're competing against each other.
No, the compensation structure there is a salary system, but way more important than the salary system is the profit sharing. So we share a large part of our profits, And that is that goes through a group pool, and your compensation, your profit share, is dependent upon the assessment of your performance, not how much money you make for the firm. We don't look at that. We look at how you perform on your targets, and you will be pretty much able to calculate how much your profit share. It's based on your function, not on how long you are with the company. It's based on the function and the assessment of your targets.
Yeah, and I think that kind of lends itself to what you were talking about earlier in terms of making decisions based off of the data. So you can see where what your targets are. You can calculate everything beforehand. It's not a black box bonus structure, which is very interesting.
No, it's so in the end, I can put some discretion into the bonuses. It's a maximum of 20% of the pool. Last year, it was only 4% that I used, and that was to compensate the people in risk and compliance, which by definition cannot have a profit dependent bonus. So actually, so that shows me that the system works really well. There is no need to deviate from what we set out and what the people can calculate, what they will get.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. And I feel like it's something that is very unique to the financial industry in general.
I think it's an asset. We've developed it over 30 years. I sometimes get new people in outside hires who challenge the way we do this, and I give them a very hard time.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, if it's something that's, you know, worked for the firm and it seems like it is, then you just got to look at the data there. But when it comes to onboarding those new traders and people, as this is their first trading job off their master's program sometimes, what is that process like for them to get onboarded at All Options?
It's a lot of fun, I would think. So we first have the selection process. And we start a group of traders twice a year. I think it's in March and in October. We did September this year, but that doesn't match the calendar of the people that we hire very well. So next year we'll do it in October. But we hire a group of people and we train them in Amsterdam, and we do lots of stuff. We do mock trading games, we do role plays, we have them sit next to traders. They get classes. After 1 month, they get a test, which is pretty difficult. I think around 20% doesn't make that test, and I think doesn't get the. Unfortunately, we have to say goodbye. Like I said, it's not a competition. We do not set out to say, okay, let's hire 20 people and keep the five best. That's not what we do. But we do only we keep only the ones that meet our standards, and usually after 1 year, that's about half of the people that we hire. The people that we unfortunately have to say goodbye to, we tell them. It doesn't come as a surprise to them. We have told them why they're not meeting our standards, and we're trying to help them to improve. But if in the end it doesn't happen, people are better off elsewhere. Now, the people who make it after 1 year, they usually stay.
That's interesting. It's a very supportive structure rather than something that's typically in the finance and trading industry, something that can be very cutthroat.
Yeah, so there's really no internal competition. That does not mean that we don't have high standards, but it's not against each other. It's really together, and that's what we also encourage people to do.
That's really interesting. And another thing is, obviously, as the CEO of All Options, you have to think about the entire business. And that also includes individuals that are not market facing or that are not trading. So what do you look for in those individuals, and how do they contribute to the success of the firm?
More or less the same thing. I would say, so currently we employ 80 people. I think around 45% of them are traders. Then we have people in risk and compliance, quite a few people in IT. And there's also a few in support functions. And we're basically looking for the same thing. We share the same values of sharing our ideas, playing together as a team. And also that people are to a high extent, within a framework, of course, but to a high extent able to shape their own jobs.
That's interesting. What do you mean by that?
If you think something is done in a way and you think you can improve it, feel free to do so. We challenge everybody not to to take things for granted. We don't have long hours, but I would not say it's a 9-to-5 job. You're really encouraged to get better and to make the company better.
Yeah. That continuous development and feedback from the employees, that must be something that's very critical and has probably yielded a decent amount of successful improvements. Can you talk to any of those?
So if we look, I mentioned the KPIs that we have. I think it was around 4 years ago, we defined these KPIs, or at least three of them. And we aim to get a certain margin share in Europe, and margin retention and coverage by the end of this year. And we made those targets. Actually, we exceeded them. What we do is not dependent on individual assessment of a trade. We try to get rid of all the micromanagement that is in the trading. And we achieve our goals by taking decisions based on data. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but.
No, it definitely does. I think one thing that I've gotten from this interview is that there's a lot of consistency throughout the principles that you employ and the people that you look for. Obviously that curiosity, that data-driven focus is something that doesn't just need to apply to traders, but to everyone. And you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Absolutely, yes. And also we try, especially IT and the developers and the traders, we try to have them as close together as possible, so that we have teams with people with different skill sets. It works way better than when you're in a team with people that where everybody can do the same, where you have a couple of mini-me's. You can learn stuff from people that do other things rather than can do the same thing.
Yeah, and it almost seems like a lot of these principles resemble more of a technology firm than that of a traditional financial institution.
Well, I was recently discussing this with a friend of mine, and we're technology driven, but I would say it's more data driven, data analysis than it's technology. We do not build FPGAs. We have no speed applications. So we're not competing in the market based on speed. But we are doing a lot of analysis. So I would say it's more data than technology. That is close to each other. And I guess what we do is what every modern firm does. It's analyze your data and improve. And it doesn't matter whether you're brewing beer or you're a supermarket or some sort of travel app or a market making. That doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's definitely with the advent of electronic trading, obviously you started the firm in 1998. How is that shift from, obviously, when you started in floor trading to electronic trading, how's that shifted the way that you think about trading and the way that you've maybe managed the firm?
Well, so like I mentioned earlier, it was very opportunistic. Trading is an opportunistic business in itself. And today we say no to most opportunities that are out there in the market, because we feel like focusing on getting better at what we're doing is more important. And it actually shows pretty good results. If we look at how we perform against our own metrics from month to month, there's a very, very steady improvement. And that's very good to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good point as well. And so
it has taken me almost 30 years though, but to get there.
Yeah. I can see it's definitely obviously All Options has been around for 24 years. You've been trading for longer than that. So it's been definitely quite a journey to get to the point that you are today, but we definitely appreciate you sharing this information with the show. So just to kind of give some closing questions, what are some of the most critical lessons that you've learned while working in the derivatives industry, and what advice would you want to pass along to someone that's trying to get started in this business?
Oh, get started. Just do it. I mean, so one thing, backtesting or doing paper exercises, there's no point to that. You just need to start and try different things and see what works best. You learn by doing it. You don't learn by thinking about it. Just start and then think. Don't take that too literal though, but as a principle, when you want to get into something, start doing it. But you always have to be critical towards what you do, and you always have to strive to improve, because so is the competition.
Yeah.
Just get started and ask questions for people who wanted to start in this business, whether it's at All Options or one of the other Dutch firms or one of the firms in the US. And I don't think they're that dissimilar, but then what do I know? Be curious.
That's great advice. And I think that's something that, especially for people watching the show, some of them are kind of all over the spectrum in terms of experience, but we do get a lot of people that are new to trading, and this is kind of their first foray into the options industry. So I think that's great advice for them. In terms of this show in itself, every week we choose a new topic. So this week we really wanted to focus on, all options and what makes a good trader. Obviously that curiosity, that data-driven mentality is something that we're going to cover this week. But what is your recommendation for a topic that we should cover in the future?
So a thing that's on our mind a lot is in the way we approach the markets, we do not put ourselves first. And we don't think that any business, whether it's an exchange, whether it's a bank, whether it's a broker, we believe that the best way to approach the market is to put the end user first, be that a speculator, an investor, a hedge fund, a pension fund, an insurance fund. Let's look at what their interests are. And that's probably to get a small spread and a lot of depth in the book, so you have a lot of liquidity. Now, how can this be achieved? We have a lot of ideas about that, but it's not always in what banks want or exchanges want. But in our discussions with regulators, we really try to get rid of fragmentation. So we feel there's too many exchanges. We feel that banks trading with their own clients hurts the best interests of their clients. We think that speed games do not add anything for the benefit of the end user. You can build a profitable business model based on speed, but it does not benefit the market. So we really think, we feel that the market structure and the interests of the end users should be put first, and that there's a lot that can be improved in terms of market structure.
Well, that's a very...
I'm not sure if this helps you, but...
No, that's a very good topic to explore, especially the fact that we do have access to some leaders at exchanges and other firms. So that's something that we can ask them is how do they optimize the experience to the end user? And do they feel that some activities that have been done can sometimes hurt that end user? Is that kind of what you were talking about?
Yes. So we feel, for example, that payment for order flow is not a good thing. Fragmentation of order flow, internalization, monopolistic data should be shared. It should be cheap and free, or cheap or free. I mean, but not right now. It's a business model for the exchanges in the market, and that doesn't benefit anyone but the exchanges. Mm-hmm. To give an example.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting, and it's something that we'll definitely explore for the next episode. I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your knowledge with our viewers, and I really appreciate it. Is there anything that you'd like to say before we kind of close out this interview?
Well, thank you very much for this interview, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to do some free advertising for all options. So I really like to encourage everybody to go for it. And even if you don't go for all options, trading is a fun business, and it's very rewarding. You can grow. It has to be something that appeals to you, but if it does, do get started in trading.
Well, that's great advice, and hopefully, you know, it resonates with a lot of our viewers. I think it will. But thank you so much again, and I will see you. Hopefully we'll be able to talk to you soon in the future.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Allard. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you're hungry for more options content, make sure to subscribe to the JLN YouTube channel and check out our social media accounts. Be sure to check out our website, johnlothiannews.com, MarketsWiki, and the John Lothian newsletter for more content.